Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 16th of November, 2018. On the podcast today, I have David Ciclatira, Executive Chairman of Live Company Group, LVCG. And David discusses the launch of Brick Live Brickosaurs, a brand new Lego brick touring show built by Bright Bricks, their subsidiary. Also on the podcast, I have Shashir Poddar, Managing Director of Tirupati Graphite, a graphite miner, producer and manufacturer, who talks about their business and their intention to list on the main market in Q1 of 2019. Plus, Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about Brexit, signals of a recession, and also covers the stocks Cortex Holdings, that's QTX, and Walker Greenback, WGB. Plus, as always, I have two lists, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. Why are these lists important? Well, I tell you what, the most important list is the most followed. I always look at this every single day. Of course, I do it for the podcast, but I do it anyway. But I mean, it's essentially a measure of money. People don't follow companies for no reason. They're either researching or about to invest or have invested, you know? And I generally tend to look at them, look at the market caps of these companies, look at the news, and if the share price hasn't spiked, then, you know, I do some further reading. If it has spiked but I still like the news, I put it on a sort of a price alert on it. So it's worth looking at this most followed list. And by the way, you can see the top 10 most followed at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ciclatira, Executive Chairman at Live Company Group. LVCG is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
You've had two bits of news there, keeping busy. But before we get into it, people are new tuning in all the time. There's different parts of the business now. And so can you summarize, please, Live Company Group? What's it all about, David?
Live Company is a company that has a brand called Brick Live. And Brick Live is a global entertainment educational brand for children. We also have just bought a company called Bright Bricks, which is the world's leading builder using bricks of models, primarily obviously Lego. And we run as a company shows around the world. We have centers, we have Brick Live cafes. So we're an extension of a brand which we own completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this news out today says you confirmed that Brick Live Brickosaurs is to launch in the UK and mainland Europe zoos. Now, this is very interesting for me because you've mentioned Marwell Zoo here, which you're going to be at, or the Brickosaur is going to be at, and that's up the road from me. So take us through the detail here, if you could, David.
Well, where I'd like to start is the concept of working with a zoo. Mm-hmm. Marwell Zoo was the first zoo that basically took our product. And this was so successful, they had 28% increase in visitors. And since that time, we've now signed over just under a dozen, I think it's 11 now, zoos, and with lots in the pipeline. And those zoos are in America. We announced one. Well, now we're just announcing today mainland Europe. And these zoos are, after all, they are animal theme parks. And what we're putting into these zoos are, it'll be Animal Paradise going forward. That's the BrickLife brand. And obviously, they're going into multi-year now. So we're not talking just a one-off placement in a zoo. We're now talking, in the case of Marwood, a three-year contract or whatever, that basically they have a secondary form of content. So in this case, we're launching a BrickLife Brachiosaurus, which is obviously dinosaurs, including a full-size, T-Rex, which you can imagine is some undertaking. But it's a very exciting development, I think, for the BrickLife brand. This was, to be fair, a project that had been initiated from BrightBricks, which obviously is now part of our group. But we're now branding everything BrickLife, and I think I was staggered to see in an internal note the other day there are 472 zoos in the USA. And so the audience or the potential for this project or project is it's like an entire division within the company will be working with the zoo markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if people try and figure out, say, you know, how profitable this is for you or how you make money here. I mean, obviously you can't put figures here and we'll see figures towards whenever they come out. But
give you the exact numbers. But let's just say an Animal Paradise, an Animal Paradise set costs X. Pretty much within one sort of zoo rental, you've covered that X. So if you're doing, Safari, the original model, is now sold out for 2 years in rental terms. So the concept of building an animal paradise for America, building one for Europe, building one for Asia, and seeing these rotate between zoos, is pretty much once they've done one rental, it's pure profit. The other thing is that people tend to forget is that these products last for 10 years. So if you start to think about what that value means to the company, because it's all about visibility, it's about having long-term contracts. So we're going into now with zoos. We started with just one rental. Now we're talking about three-year contracts with zoos. But there are so many zoos. I know we're in discussion with five mainland European zoos as we speak. The potential for this element is massive because it's clearly knocking on an open door.
But already, I mean, you said Marwell pretty much will sort of pay for that, and then you move on, and you can do that for up to 10 years, which is an impressive and efficient, you know, use of capital, isn't it?
It is, but you know, the thing about BrickLife is a global brand that we own, and of course, this reinforces the brand because if you go to Marwell Zoo and you now find that it is called BrickLife Brachiosaurus, you're constantly reminded about the brand. But I think also it's the amount of audience we're going to get to because the audience is growing. So the value of this company is, of course, it's going to be the P&L, and the zoo product looks like creating super P&L. It's also about the brand value and the fact that you own that brand and you own that interesting that space within the kids' environment. It's interesting. I was in Seoul when I last spoke to you, I think, and in Seoul we've made a presentation to a zoo, and the Seoul Zoo is interested in basically the education element. So we're talking about not just placing animals, we're talking about creating a small area that would contain educational elements using bricks and stuff and building for kids. So it's quite an interesting project.
Yeah, and just moving back to the other bit of news you mentioned, you signed the agreement with Live Nation yesterday.
Yeah, it's interesting because we obviously announced an involvement with Live Nation and the Dallas Cowboys And in fact, the tickets went on sale 2 weeks ago for a January show. But it's a long-term agreement with Live Nation, and like many things, you announce things because we had to announce because the tickets were on sale. But now, finally, the lawyers have all got together, and finally, we've finally signed it. And it's a fantastic piece of news for us, and it's also great because it's signed with Parallel 360, which is our joint venture company in the United States. This is a 360 is an amazingly talented content business, which has different areas within its own business. They're super clever people, and I'm delighted that it's our first contract that we've signed.
Excellent stuff. Well, David, one final thing. I always ask this. I give my call to action here. If they're listening to this, like the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons in summary why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Hey, they should become an investor. Well, I think we're a global brand. We are in lots of places in the world with a great product. We are not affected by Brexit in any shape or form. That's a sort of thing you could add. It's a topical reason. And I think in long-term value, the value has a long way to go.
Excellent stuff, David. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Shishir Poddar, Managing Director of Tirupati Graphite. Shishir, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure.
Now, you're not yet listed on the stock market, but you're hoping to do so, and you're going through the process, and so that will be happening in the next couple of months, is that right?
Yes, so we are in the process. You know, it has to go through the process. It has to go through the UK LA approval. We plan to list on the standard list. So as soon as the process is complete, we'll do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's more about building the company, you know. Our target is to build a really good graphite company. Listing is just a part of that process.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, give us a slight overview, a summary, say a 10 to 30 second, you know, précis of what is Tirupati Graphite all about. I can sort of make a guess because graphite's in the title there, but tell us all about it if you could, please.
So we are possibly one of the very few fully integrated graphite companies in the world, from the mine to the downstream, and we are also integrated into the graphene space. Graphene is the cusp of the value chain in graphite. We are based in Madagascar, which is considered and historically known to be one of the world's leading sources and best sources of graphite. We have various USPs. We constitute a team that has been into graphite for decades. So it's not something new for us. It's not that we are at a starting point, and it's not a new entrant in the space. We are very well known as Tirupati in the graphite space.
Yeah, and it must be quite exciting for you, because like you say, you've been involved in graphite for decades, and yet, you know, in the last, I'd say, 5 years maybe, and even now, I think, graphite is sort of underplayed compared to other commodities in the sort of, you know, electric vehicle space and all that stuff. But I mean, I think it's underplayed, and it hasn't really got the limelight. But it must be quite exciting for you now that graphite is sort of grabbing a bit of the attention, is it?
Yes. So graphite is a very special material, if I can say that way. It's a material with very unique properties. It's an allotrope of carbon and it's crystalline. It's the only non-metal which is a good conductor. And there are so many more properties. As a result of these properties, the applications of graphite are also quite diverse. So what is now happening is, in a lot of very high-tech applications, like you said, in lithium-ion batteries, there's a big surge in demand, which is it is inevitable, if I put it that way. Energy storage is a space where we need the world to improve its presence. That helps us improve energy efficiency. So that's going to be electric vehicles will be there, grid storage of energy will be there, and we need the batteries, and the battery needs graphite. There's no battery that doesn't need graphite, and lithium ion has more graphite than it has lithium. So all put together, apart from this, there are various other applications. I would like to speak about fire retardants. You know, fire retardants are something that are life-saving or destruction averting. There have been fire retardants based on bromine, which have been, in vogue previously. But over the last, 2 to 3 decades, fire retardants based on graphite have developed, and they have proven to be better than any other source. So as a result, you know, increasingly there is awareness and understanding that this industry must transform to use graphite-based fire retardants as much as we can. It can avert fire better than any other fire retardant, and if a fire does occur, it also is more effective in containing it. So similarly, in composites, because of the kind of properties graphite has, it's the only non-metal which is a good conductor of heat and electricity. It's a lubricant. It reflects light. There are so many unique properties, and in one material. So because of that, it actually has a lot of applications in different types of composites. So I must say, I really am very happy that we are realizing more about this material. The world is using it more and more in so many applications, and that's what is driving demand. When the demand is driven, obviously you need to create supply for the material. So, you know, this is a time where we will see that we have new graphite sources coming up. On the supply side, there is a threat, I would say, because the entire world is an importer of graphite, more or less, apart from a few countries, like Brazil produces graphite. But every part of the world imports graphite, and we are mostly sourcing it from China. China itself has a lot of, changes in its the way they do things, if I can put it that way. They are more conscious about the environment, so they are, more prudent on how any activity should be performed. So as a result, there's an improved level playing field around the world. And diversity of source has become a very vital thing for the entire developed world, because this is a critical material. I think the European Union and the United States, they've both classified it as a critical material. So having said all this, in a nutshell, what we actually need is some good projects that come up in graphite, which provide quality graphite and with consistency. These are the important things in the industry as an application.
Yeah, well, let's talk about your company specifically. So you say you're producing, you're mining and producing and selling, is that right?
Yes, so we are mining in Madagascar at present, we are producing, we are selling. We have a pilot scale plant in India for fire retardants, one of the downstream projects. We are building comprehensive downstream plants in India apart from what we are building in Madagascar. And we are building a research and technology center that will very deeply work on the graphene space. The idea is to develop graphene in a commercially viable cost structure so that we can catalyze the development of its use. In Madagascar, we are developing in staged, we have a very unique concept of how to develop the mine and the processing plants. So we are developing everything in a modular manner. So by 2019, we will have 27,000 tons of production in Madagascar, up from what we have now. If I break that down, from January, we have a production of about 3,000 tons per annum rate commencing. Then in March, or you can say early April, we commence with another 6,000 tons. And then in Q4 2019, we commence 18,000 tons. And from there on, over the next 2 years further, we add further to build to 81,000 tons.
And that's, 81,000 tons of what, flake graphite, or what are you producing there, sorry?
Yeah, so it's all flake graphite. It's processed flake graphite. From Madagascar, what comes out would be more or less up to 96% carbon. So, different applications need different purity. It'll be processed, tailor-made to a customer specification, and shipped around the world for different applications. And a portion of what we produce in Madagascar would ultimately end into our own further downstream processing plant, which processes it up to 99 plus purity, up to 99.95. These types of graphite go into technology applications. So apart from purification, there are various other processes that we have to, there inbuilt. So it's like micronization, intercalation, which makes expandable graphite and fire retardant type of graphite, and particles shaping, which is what we need for lithium-ion batteries. It's quite a comprehensive setup that we make, and as a result of that, we can provide flake graphite for every applications from industrial to technology, end to end, A to Z. If you need any graphite, you can bank on us. That's how we're building this company.
Excellent stuff. So just summarize again, you are at what level of production right now and what do you hope to achieve by when?
Perfect. So we are producing at the rate of more or less 50 tons a month at this stage. From January, we produce at the rate of 300 tons a month. From April, we produce at the rate of 700 to 800 tons a month. And from November, October and November, we produce more or less 2,300 tons a month. That's what we have for the next year. In 2020, we add another 1,500 tons a month in two locations, so total 3,000 tons. And in 2021, we add another 1,500 tons. All put together, this sums up more or less as 6,500 tons of graphite every month, more or less 81,000 tons of graphite a year. That's what we build in Madagascar.
Yeah, and anyone looking to sort of put some figures on this, what is graphite selling for at the moment? I understand there's different prices for different flake size, isn't there?
Yeah. Madagascar has this uniqueness that it provides higher, larger flake graphite. Larger the flake, more the price of graphite. So what we have in Madagascar gives us the best distribution, you can say, more or less seen in anywhere around the world. If I talk of pricing, so the jumbo flakes, as they are called commonly, they're selling more or less at present at about $1,500 a ton. The large flakes are selling more or less around $1,100 a ton, and the finer grade is selling more or less at about $700 a ton. These figures are, you can find them everywhere, you know. There are so many research companies that are letting out graphite pricing situations, etc. We ourselves track a lot. We have, international trade data month by month compiled, so these are verifiable. Coming to what we expect out of R as a basket, I'm sure we should not be looking at anything less than $1,000 a ton. But yes, we still would request people to have a look and take their own guidance. For you to understand, more or less, our graphite has 35% of jumbo flakes, 35% of large flakes, and the balance 30% of fine flakes. There are so many figures in the market, you can just find it out. This is the way it is.
Yeah, okay, marvelous stuff. And so, if someone, like I say, I mean, if someone's trying to work out that now, what do you, I mean, do you have a target of production as in, you know, money per year? What are you looking to produce? I mean, what are you looking to turn over then?
Right, so more or less, 81,000 tons of graphite would transpond to $81 million. That comes from Madagascar. Out of that, 20,000 tons would get into the downstream projects. So the value add downstream graphite, that has a range starting from $2,500 to even $5,000. So 20,000 tons would be coming out from there. And at the end, we are rolling out about 10 kgs per day of graphene manufacturing capacity at our technology and research center. I would say that graphene is something which really needs more understanding at this stage. And what we want to do is to develop graphene in a manner that we can catalyze that understanding in applications. As far as, future, you can say, growth is concerned, graphene is a material that can have various things transformed in the world. That's what we wish to catalyze. And what values it can create is unimaginable for us at this stage. But it's a new material. There are risks around it. We need to be conscious about that. Having said that, we still need to do things to produce or manufacture something which has a potential like graphene has. That's what we are conscious of, and that's what we are working on capitalizing on.
Yeah, I understand you're still probably a couple of months off listing there, but do you have any idea or indication as to what valuation you'll be listing at?
Well, I think the research analyst of our brokers, Optiva Securities, he's been to Madagascar, he's writing a research. We are looking forward to what comes out from there. What I can say is we will have a prudent valuation for our new incoming investors in the future so that they have a reasonable upside on their investment. That's how we look at it and be prudent in how we price our equity.
Yeah, everyone likes a bargain. Shashir, thanks for that coming on. One final thing to do. If someone's listening to this right now, likes the sound of what they're hearing, and would like to add you to their watch list, can you give them, in summary, sort of three quick reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please?
Great. So allow me to give more than three.
Yeah.
One, we are in Madagascar, which is known to be one of the highest quality graphite deposits in the world. Two, we are not a new entrant in this space. I myself have been working on graphite for 25 years. We have a team that has put together, if I add up their experiences, it's more or less 5-7 decades of experience in this space. Three, we are fully integrated from mining unto graphene, unto all downstream, which is quite unique in a way, if I can put it. Four, we are very modular, so we have low capex and low investment profile, and we build organically with what we earn because we are modular. Five, we are, I would say our analyst has confirmed that we are at the lowest quartile in our capex requirements and the OPEX numbers for our operation. And finally, we are an operating graphite company and building it on from here, from where we are. We are not a new entrant, and we are there to be there. We will be building this company as one of the lead graphite companies in the world. That's how the management looks at it, and the management has all the confidence to be able to do it.
Excellent stuff. Shashir, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again when you list. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
I'm all right. Well, good. So that, some of my stocks are
better
bouncing
than the Prime Minister, presumably.
Yes. Well, do you know what? Fair play, she put in a long day yesterday, and she probably didn't have much sleep either end of the day.
And to be
either.
Fair, she never ran away and hid, you know? She was there. So I was impressed. And she didn't get vituperative like the President of the United States seems to do and get a bit eggy with people if things aren't going their his way. So I was, you know, quietly impressed, I have to say.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it is so easy to lose your temper when you are tired. I know that with my kids, trying to put them to bed at night.
Yeah.
Get to bed! Yeah, so, but fair play, I mean, do you know what? It's I was reading, you know, and I'm sort of more bullish now than ever because I read a little stat saying, and I don't know if it's correct, because it seemed the odds, you know, are excellent for a Santa rally. And apparently, I think it was either Times or Telegraph saying, since 1987, there's the amount of times it's risen, gives away to an 83% chance of a rise of FTSE 100 stocks. And normally, it's around about 2%, 2.4%. So I thought, 83%, that's excellent odds for a rally, isn't it?
It is very good odds. I mean, obviously, you're going to have to be pretty nimble to make advantage of that. And you might have to start using leverage products or spread, which, you know, is something that's very special. So you've really got to know what you're doing. And clearly, it's going to be a certain tactic for you if you're a trader and not a long-term investor. But it's interesting. I mean, I remember when I started in the market in 1991, everybody used to talk about the January effect. Because, you know, people would review their finances at the year end. They think, oh, I need to, you know, get saving. It's a bit like gym memberships, I suppose, but I've got to get saving. Let's put some money in. And the fund managers would get all their new money in December and January, and they'd put the money into the funds, their funds in January, and that was a January effect. And I think the Santa rally, people began to think, market always goes up in January, so let's start buying in December. And I think that's partly some of its origin. So we might end up talking about the November effect rather than the Santa rally at some stage when people start thinking we better get in November rather than December. So there's an element, I think, of sort of behavioural finance and market psychology and kidology in there. But so I can understand why it happens. If you're a trader, have a look. if you're an investor, you're just going to, you know, what will be and focus on company fundamentals and cash flows and not get too upset about the bloke with a beard and a big sack of presents.
Yeah, well, I think there already is that stat out there saying apparently if you, it's called the Halloween effect, isn't it? Where you basically invest on November the 1st and it's a better chance of returns. So you invest from November to, I think, May than it is from May to October. Anyway, okay.
Statistically so.
Any thoughts on yesterday's Brexit chaos, Russ, and where
I mean, I think what you saw was in some ways a bit of a Pavlovian market reaction, very similar to what we saw in June 2016 on the day for the referendum. But sterling went through the floorboards, domestically exposed stocks went down, exporters, dollar earners, particularly gold and silver miners, went up. Though I would say that the dollar earners didn't go up as much this time as anything like as much as they did in June 18. So, you know, somebody rang the bell and the market dog slavered and you saw the same sort of knee-jerk reaction. And, you know, you've still got that same bifurcation in the market. You've got overseas earnings perceived to be a better play than the domestic ones. The domestic ones are miles cheaper, but you're struggling to find a catalyst to unlock that value so that the debate goes on. We don't know what's going to happen. And I think in the short term, you know, that's the biggest thing. You can almost argue it makes no deal more likely, except for the fact that nobody in Parliament seems to want no deal. But you've got the Prime Minister trying to cobble together 53 different flavours of some kind of deal to appease most people, which the European Union aren't going to accept. So I still think she's in a virtually impossible position. Everybody it means that there won't be no deal. If anything, I actually think it means that no deal may be more likely. We end up with a World Trade Organization type mechanism. And the question for investors, and I stress it, you know, in the short term, the here and the now, nobody knows what it means. That's why sterling's going down, and that's then influencing domestic and international stocks. In the long run, looking at companies that you own in your portfolio or you're thinking of researching, you've just got to think, in the end, does this affect the demand in the long term for the company's supply services and products? Does it affect the way in which you're able to charge for them? Does it damage their pricing power? Does it make any difference to their competitive position within their industry? And if the answers are yes, then you may either need to take evasive action or reevaluate or see if the valuation reflects those risks. If the answer is no, might be a buying opportunity. You might just have to be brave and patient, but who knows? Mm-hmm. So it's all down to company competitive position, financials, management acumen, and ultimately valuation. Some of those may be affected, some might not be.
Yeah, I sort of felt sorry for her because I think what she was doing there was trying to get the best deal from her perspective and from the people of the country as a Remainer kind of thing. But what you should understand is that people wanted out. So she's trying to say, okay, this is going to be less disruptive, but
you can argue that even Remainers don't like it because, you know, we're in the union, but without any influence over policy, which even Remainers don't seem very happy with reading the Financial Times this morning. You know, even Martin Wolf's fulminating against how the deal has done one thing, which is unite everybody because nobody likes it, you know, but that shows how difficult the position is. Does it make a second referendum more likely? I'd be surprised because I think the country would tear itself to bits, and I'm not sure people would change their views necessarily. And does it make no deal more likely? For me, it does a little bit, even if nobody in Parliament wants it, because we're getting closer and closer to the deadline.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we looked last week. I said, come up with some indicators.
Oh, yeah.
Have they changed at all? I mean, some recession signal indicators.
I mean, Dr. Copper's kept on going down. Dr. Cosby hasn't done much this week. The other one that I did flag up was the SOX index, the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index, basket of 30-odd silicon chip companies. That rallied 3% this week, or it has done so far, but just watch overnight, NVIDIA, graphics processing unit, major player in graphics chips for video games. If you look at the chart, taking it back to its history in 1999, you'll get vertigo. It's going to be one of those stocks that's either going to keep on going up like the rocket or come down like the stick. It's not going to plateau, and it had third quarter results last night, and they warned for the fourth quarter, and the stock's down 16% in after hours. Now, that's almost a quasi-FANG cult stock. It's right up there in terms of how it's performed. It's been a phenomenal runner for the last couple of years, but those with very long memories, which I'm afraid to say means me, because I've been doing this for a very long time, remember that in the bear markets of 2000 to 2003 and 2007 to 2009, this stock went down by more than 80%. So when it goes wrong, it goes really badly wrong. And if you look at the company's balance sheet right now, accounts receivable and trade inventories have gone up by more than 30% sequentially for two quarters in a row, when sales are flat to down, and they're going down sharply in Q4. The company's flagging inventory as an issue. It's particularly flagging weakness in Bitcoin mining equipment as a problem, but also indigestion in the video games consoles market. So it's a highly operationally leveraged stock, and it's classic. It's great that you get quarterly numbers. I'm sure as a manager, it's an absolute pain in the bum. But it means as an analyst, look at the balance sheet first. These are highly geared companies. If inventories are tracking below sales growth, things are humming along. Once inventory and receivables growth starts to outstrip sales growth, you're always at risk of a short-term stumble. That's what we've got right now. And this is a cult momentum stock that is suddenly going wrong. So let's see what the SOX does today and NVIDIA does today. But on the face of it, it's not a great sign.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Okay, so stocks-wise, what else are we looking at?
We got two, one that I've looked at before and made a mess of, and then one that I've never looked at before. I've had on my radar for a while, but I'm having a look today. So Quartix is the first one, QTX AIM, and then the second one is Walker Green Bank, WGB AIM.
Okay, well, let's go for the first one, Quartix, yeah?
Quartix, yeah, it's a GPS telematics player. It provides equipment to fleet owners and so on, so make sure the drivers are behaving, they're not overdoing their hours, they're not having any accidents. So it doesn't deal directly with the insurance companies. It used to, or it's trending away from that. It's moving away from that towards the fleet owners. And I'm just picking it up because, A, it's a stock that's not done what I hoped it would do when we first looked at it in May 17 at 400p. It's now about 250. And it's got one quoted peer, which is TrackMate, T-R-A-K. Mm-hmm. And that's had a monster profit warning today, and the stock's down about 40%. Now, they do go about this in slightly different ways. TrackMate deals more with the insurance companies. Quartix deals more with the fleet owners. But so looking at the TrackMate interims today, sales down 38, operating loss, debt up. They blamed exiting a business, fine. They blamed inventory rundown at a customer, interesting. They blamed attrition in their insurance business, doesn't really matter for Quartix. But they've also said lower adoption rates in fleet owners and lower conversion rates. And I'm thinking, okay. Now, I know that Quartix in October announced that trading was in line, but having got this stock wrong and now seeing this, I'm going to cut and run and wash my hands of it.
Okay.
It's still on 18. It's still got a market cap of 115 million with sales of 25. It's on 18 times forward earnings with a yield of 3. So I suspect I probably just got in, you know, looked at the growth, got excited about the growth, paid the wrong multiple for it. Classic warning, valuation is the ultimate arbiter of your long-term return. And, you know, I just doesn't feel like there's enough momentum there right now, particularly in this market environment, to keep people interested. I seriously hope I'm wrong because I think the concept is great. You know, fleet insurers can track all this data. It lowers their insurance costs, but it just doesn't feel like it's happening quickly enough at the moment to justify the multiples.
Okay, that's QTX, some other stuff.
QTX.
And what's the other one, Russ?
Now, Walker Green Bank, WGB, not probably a topic that you and I are experts on, fancy wallpaper, fabrics and furnishings. It owns the brands like Morris, Zoffany, Sanderson and Harlequin, so it's a high quality expensive kit made at their own UK factories. So why am I looking at this one? Okay, December 2015, a flood at a factory in Loughborough. November 17, profit warning. December 17, fire at a factory. July 18, profit warning. October 18, chief executive officer out the door. Recently appointed non-executive director of ex-Whitbread becomes in and temporary executive chairman. So it's a mess. But it's got high quality products. It's got, on the face of it, terrific brands, but it is vertically integrated. So obviously, if things are going well, orders are good, you'll get the operational gearing from the manufacturing. If things are going badly, it works either way, and their licensing business has weakened a bit. But on the face of it, the first half numbers for all of these disasters, sales were down 1%, operating profit was down 12 to £4.3 million. The dividend was flat at 69.69p, and net debt is modest at £3.4 million. Even allowing for the pension deficit, financial charges were 400 grand when it was making 4.3 million in operating profit. So your balance sheet is on your side. There's no clock ticking. There's no bank getting shirty with you. They're now coming into the key autumn selling season, so that there is ample scope for things to go wrong. But the shares have gone from £2.40 to 77p. And on the face of it, it's on less than 10 times earnings with a yield of nearly 5% and no balance sheet pressure. So well, you've got a value stock here. What you're looking for now is a catalyst. I'm going to sit and wait and see what happens, but I think it might be interesting. Again, you're probably going to get no joy on any of these UK consumer site players until we know what's going to happen with Brexit. If you do get any visibility, whether it's deal, no deal or what, that might help. And I can't help but think at some stage with the valuation where it is, It's one of those stocks, and we might just think, actually, this is a fantastic company. I'm going to buy the whole thing.
What is the ticker?
WGB, or the chart will make you feel ill, just like Nvidia's does, but in the other way, because it's going in the opposite direction.
Top left to
bottom right, all the way.
Yeah, but you know what, though? That may seem like a bottom there, saying that. It's done
well,
that before.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, yeah. At 120, it did that kind of formation. Now, I would look for it to get above the 200-day moving average, which is around about just over a pound. So
there we go.
Back above there. And it,
see what happens.
Broke as a trend, maybe. But there we are. Yeah, WGB. Marvellous stuff, Russ.
Have a great weekend, my friend.
You too. Any plans?
As little as possible. I've had a really busy week, and I'm looking forward to just trying to chill out with my lovely lady wife and kids, touch wood.
Marvellous stuff.
What about you?
Except, do you know what? The kids are going away with the mother-in-law, so me and the wife are doing as little as
whooping
possible.
It up. You'll be hanging from the chandeliers.
Yeah, again, yes. Cheers,
again.
Russ.
Take care.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Itaconics PLC, that's ITX. At four, Cradle Arc, CRA. At three, FlyB Group, FLYB. At two, Integumen, ticker skin. And number one, most followed company, is OilX, OEX. And all these companies have it's been very volatile of late. I think a lot of traders are following them. But they've been up and down like crazy. Okay, top five most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours are as follows. At five, Ncondezi Energy, shareholder loan restructuring complete. At four, Management Resource Solutions, MRR secures the refurbishment of six excavators. At three, completion sale of T3 projects, a Metal Tiger. At two, Horizonte Minerals, a director PDMR shareholding. So that's over the last 2 days, I think now, the CFO, the CEO, and the non-executive director buying shares in Horizonte. Number one, most liked RNS, Neil, yes, on the came on the podcast, and talking about graphene-enhanced aircraft interior parts. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.